Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. My name is Marcus Marrett, and on today's episode, I could not be happier to be speaking to the talent and the brains behind three of the shirts in my own kit collection, the brains behind Kit and Bone, Matt Pascoe. Matt, nice to speak to you today.
How are you, Marcus? You all right?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Absolutely fine. Enjoying the late summer sunshine. Can't complain.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, can you let people know where are you based?
So down in Surrey. So down south. Sort of been down here for about 10, 15 years now. Sort of grew up nearer to Peterborough, but have come south for a different life and a different lifestyle. Sort of followed my wife, basically.
Okay. Well, Peterborough is not too far away from Lincolnshire, is where I grew up.
So absolutely. I could hear it in your voice.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. See, I wouldn't have picked a Peterborough accent in your own voice.
No, so I grew up sort of maybe the best part of 30 miles south of Peterborough. So, but used to go up to Posh a lot. So,
well, that was going to be my next question. Are you a Posh fan yourself?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah, strong connection with the club. Worked with the club quite a lot over the years. I actually designed their kit 1 year. It was a competition that was run when I was still a student, and I won that. So that was kind of perhaps my first ever kit design that came to fruition.
Brilliant! Well, I'll tell you what. If you can let people know where they can find you online, and then let's jump deep into your first forays into kit design with Peterborough.
Okay. So you can find Kit and Bone across all social media on at Kit and Bone. And then you can also find the website with the store at kitandbone.com.
Brilliant, fantastic. And what about your work outside of Kit and Bone? Where can they see Matt Pascoe, the designer, and touching on the non-football work you do?
Yeah, so you can find me on social media as at Matt Pascoe Draws. So that is only on Twitter now, I believe. And maybe on my Dribbble account as well. If you're anyone that's got a Dribbble account, you can see some old scribblings on there.
Very good. So let's talk about designing kits for the club you support, Peterborough United. Tell us a bit about this.
So, as I said a minute ago, that was a competition that the club ran. It'll be 20 years ago next season. So, hey, maybe there's an opportunity to do a 20th anniversary version of that with the club. It was really early days of online competitions. It was basically just an open voting. I remember there being lots and lots of Cambridge fans trying to skew the voting for a particular design that I think possibly might have been unpopular if it was brought to life. But yeah, I mean, as an opportunity for somebody who has grown up loving football shirts and the details of football shirts and sort of seeing how the heritage of kits kind of plays through into the modern era and then being reimagined and brought to life as something completely new. To be able to do that as a teenager was just an incredible experience. And I guess it kind of pointed me in a direction that I always wanted to go in, and I've been all around the houses getting to this point, but I feel perhaps like I'm now starting to live out the life that I've always secretly craved.
Well, yeah, I could understand that for sure. Can you talk us through the approach you took for that and describe to us the kit you designed for Peterborough?
Yeah, absolutely. So the shirt itself, the shirt that they wore in the end was it was blue, obviously from the sort of from the waist up to the chest, And then was white from the chest upwards. I had a blue V-neck collar, although the original design had a round neck collar. But Barry Fry vetoed the round neck.
Oh, really?
He said he didn't want any of the larger players not cutting it down the middle, and then used some expletives to describe what he would describe the club as looking like. So it's like half and half blue, and then sort of with the white running down the sleeves. It was inspired by sort of earlier posh kits. So when they first went into the blue, they were like a blue version of Arsenal. So that sort of blue body with the white sleeves.
Okay.
And the idea I actually entered an incorrect design. I drew it, and then I mocked it up in Photoshop, really early Photoshop. And I actually did the design wrong from my illustration that I'd done. And I don't know quite how to this day it kind of happened, but basically it was meant to be blue with white sleeves, but then just have this coloured line running across the chest, which then went down the sleeves. But for some reason, I did the whole top half white, which is what they went with. And, you know, I won the voting on the competition, and I guess the rest is history.
Oh, good for you. And kind of looking back, can you really see how that acted as a starting point for you with what you do now and how Kit and Bone has grown so much?
I think so. I think it was quite interesting as a at that time for me to be able to be seeing the process of how they brought the shirts to life, and sort of working with the club then to kind of see the different developments. I've still got all of the prototypes at home. I was given those by the club. I've got sort of, I guess, eight different variants, sort of like ranging from, I think it was 2001 that the competition was run. So there's some very sort of standard looking football shirt material that you'd expect to get. And then there are some of feels a bit more like a Kappa shirt, where it's got that kind of, like the early sort of noughties Kappa shirts, where it's that really like sort of thin, stretchy material. There were some of those, but again, there were some slightly rounder players in the squad at the time, and they weren't keen on that. So working with the club, working with the process, and then being able to, we looked at them building like a range off the back of that, and sort of like taking the design as a central theme, and then sort of blowing it up and having some of the different characteristics of the kit itself sort of through leisure wear and that sort of thing. Many of the items didn't come to fruition in the end. It's obviously a small club, but it was a really great experience.
And please tell me you've still got one of those shirts nicely saved and in
there is
in
there
good
is
condition
one
somewhere. Yeah.
Yes, sorry. There is one tucked away. It used to go with me to one of my job interviews as my sort of final gambit, the last thing that I'd pull out of the back of the portfolio. So you'd get everything else was loads of plastic sheets and wallets, and then you'd pull out this football shirt at the end. Just
very good.
Trying to be memorable.
And how did the sponsor work on that shirt? Did the sponsor fit nicely, or was it one of those horribly visually jarring sponsors?
Well, so at the time, the club didn't actually have a sponsor on the shirt.
Even better.
But they did have a logo that said The Posh on the front. So basically, they have the shirt has the club's nickname.
Okay, right.
And it's a nice chunky sans serif font. It's cool. It looks good.
Yeah.
And then the badge was centralised. Didn't have a manufacturer name on it either, because it was done by a non-branded company. So it actually was very, very simple in terms of the final one they produced. It was very sort of plain and sort of pared back.
Oh, very good. And I saw a wee bit of discussion online after Tottenham's third kit came out this season that has the centralised badge. How do you feel about centralised badges? Are you pro, against, or if, as long as it fits the overall look, it works?
Yeah, I think there are some real classic cases of brilliant centralised badges where it does look superb. I mean, I think those sort of second half of the 90s when Umbro went all down that, there are some really lovely, there are some really lovely Everton kits, there are some really lovely Manchester United shirts, and especially the England kits, I guess sort of 96 to 2000, those two shirts that have that centralised badge, home and away, were superb. I think there are some really interesting developments that have happened kind of in football design since then that perhaps aren't allowing that lockup to really work as well. So I think the Tottenham third kit is a really, really strong example of how that perhaps doesn't work quite as well, where their sponsor has the three big letters and then the very thin column of the I in the middle of the AIA, and then their badge itself is a very thin one with the cockerel. And I think where clubs have dropped the shield around the central motif on a lot of designs, it kind of creates quite a void of anything particularly balancing going on. There's no balance now, I think, to some of those designs. So it works on some, but I think on others it doesn't. I think the Tottenham one is a good example of it perhaps failing slightly in its mission. Whereas there are some others I think that are out there this season that are actually really quite nice.
Whenever I think of centralized badges, and it probably speaks about the era of football that most kind of holds with me, was Newcastle United. I don't remember specifically what year, in the 90s, when they had it was a kit made by Adidas, round neck. I'm sure Newcastle Brown Ale was still the sponsor. And it was actually, I think it might have been Kenny Dalglish's first season in charge of the club. The Timori Ketspire team. I think there was a Swedish striker they'd signed from AC Milan. That Newcastle kit is the one that springs to mind when it comes to centralised badges for me.
So that is an absolute beauty of a shirt. It's got everything, hasn't it? You know, there's a great photograph of Liam Gallagher wearing that shirt live on stage. Yeah. Have you ever seen that? That's great.
No, I've not really.
He's got it in long sleeves, so it's got the three stripes down the arm. It's got the nice chunky sort of full knit cuffs and the same around the collar and it had the flash of the orange in it, didn't it? That they brought out, I think, from the Newcastle Brown Ale logo. And then it had the big shield then on the back that they brought out the cuffs for the numbers in.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that the shield on the badge with the numbers, and I think there was something a wee bit jazzy about the typeface for the numbers and names on the back. Maybe not necessarily kind of enormously different now looking back, but it seemed at the time and just generally overall. And I seem to remember Adidas was written on the shirt itself in terms of the manufacturer as well, and kind of with that splash of orange that you referenced. Yeah
absolutely, that was it. Yeah, because it was at a time when Adidas had dropped any logo mark, wasn't it? It was just the word type that they had. You've pulled out an absolute peach of a shirt there. It's a cracker.
that just kind of sprang to mind. So tell us about your love of football and where that connection is. Did you play a lot when you were a youngster?
No, do you know what? It's really strange. I think this is probably why, as an adult now, I'm still living out that kind of childhood dream. I didn't really get into football until I was perhaps 11 or 12. Football wasn't really kind of part of home life as a kid. My parents weren't into football. Parents are both Welsh. Rugby was the sport at home.
Okay.
So we watched a lot of rugby as a kid. I love my rugby. As I was then sort of progressing into kind of like a secondary school age, I sort of found football, and I found design in football at the same time. You know, I used to love things like Match magazine and like the little character they had in that as a way of kind of bringing, I don't know, sort of characters to life sort of through football. It's not just about the football on the pitch, but there's all the other stuff that's going on around football that I think I've always just been completely in love with. I used to love, it was a cartoon series, wasn't it, called the Hurricanes?
Yes.
I used to love that. And, you know, and just the fact that it was this notion that, you know, you could take reality and you could just then turn it into something unique and new that you've just created and gone, well, this is my football team. This is how we're going to look and what we're going to wear and sort of create your own sort of like style and culture just around something that's completely out of your head. And I think, you know, even though that's 25 years ago now, I'm still, you know, it all comes from the same place. I think that love of the stuff that orbits the game, I think, is my real, what I really love.
And for anyone that isn't quite sure what we're referring to when we say the Hurricanes, just go to YouTube, type in the Hurricanes and take yourself down a rabbit hole. And that was even done in that style of animation at the time. Like I remember Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles being in that slightly juddery animated style, which obviously was just down to the production that they were able to do at the time. But all of that look really felt part of it. And was there not another cartoon at the time that had, there was like a Wayne Gretzky character. There was,
yeah,
there was characters from other sports. There was a basketball player in there. That'll be another rabbit hole I'll need to go down after this. But I do remember specifically the Hurricanes. Yeah, they wore, was it a cream kit with kind of blue and red accents?
Yes.
I seem to remember, yeah?
Yeah, okay. It was quite USA, I think, wasn't it? In its kind of, in its makeup, it felt like a very sort of 90s American soccer inspired kind of vibe. It was, you know, it's beautiful. I mean, I've got such a love for those sort of MLS shirts of the same era. And I think...
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I just love those kits. And I love the way that they always used to bring the team names to life, sort of in the sponsor position.
Yes.
Those are beautiful. And you know, and I think the Hurricanes itself as a TV show kind of was born out of that same kind of lens for soccer at the time.
It did have a little bit of a Roy of the Rovers goes stateside kind of a feel to it.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly that.
So have you played the game much yourself?
Yes. Yeah, I played, played through my teens up to, I think I only played one season, I think, of men's football, which I very much enjoyed. That's probably my best season. Yeah, I seem to be able to hit the ball from anywhere and go in the back of the net, which was quite unusual.
I was going to ask, can you describe yourself as a player?
I think my playing style over the years has taken many different forms. I think I was sort of best as a robust centre back. I was always fairly quick as a lad, and I've been about the height I am now since I was about 13. So I kind of basically got to about 15 to stop growing. But for a couple of golden years, I was the big kid that could basically just like run fast and knock people over. So
I can say I was never the tall kid, but I just, like you, didn't continue growing after about 16.
Yeah, I'm definitely not the tall one now.
So you don't have to be modest on this, but tell us who would be the most comparable footballer to yourself if you were to say, you know what, I would describe myself as a bit of that guy.
Oh, well, let's see. I mean, I think I'd probably just quite like to be Yap Stam.
Oh, no, respectful choice, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, a none shall pass attitude.
Yes, good call, very good shout. So I think it would be great for us to dive deep into Kit and Bone, especially knowing where it all started, and even the character and the ethos, like even why the name Kit and Bone. And I should tell people I am wearing the Lost Angels shirt myself as we speak, the beautiful black and gold shirt from Kit and Bone. I got two others at the same time, and I remember it was an evening that I was choosing which ones I was going to order, and you have this great thing that you can request an illustrative Kit and Bone character in whatever shirt you wish, and you'll illustrate it and you'll supply it as a print with the shirts. And the only reason I didn't request that at the same time was because it was taking too long for me to make a decision, and I had other things to do that evening, and I had to just stop myself and say, well, listen, I'll get another Kit and Bone shirt at some point, so I'll make my decision then, because I need to choose very carefully with that.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, thank you, first of all, for ordering the ones that you did. And I must say, actually, I was talking before we started recording with Marcus, and I've just redecorated the studio in which Kit and Bone operates out of, and I had the opportunity to finally get a couple of prints up on the wall for myself.
Yes.
And obviously, as somebody who has all of the prints and access to absolutely every single one that's ever been made, of which there are hundreds now.
Good.
It was really difficult to kind of actually make a choice. I had to choose two, and the first one for me was really simple. It's the Ronaldo 98 boots around the neck, the slumped head, and just looking, you know, the really forlorn Ronaldo. I call that the R998 heartbreak print.
Oh, yes.
It's an absolute, you know, I love that. I love that print, and that went straight up on the wall. But I actually went for the Inter Milan away shirt from last season as my second option. I think the colours in that are just such lovely colours. The turquoise, the black and the gold is just such a lovely lovely combination. So that that pairs up with Ronaldo on the back wall. And actually talking about the character, I mean, that's ultimately where Kit and Bone began. He was Boney is the name of our skeleton character that lives at the center of everything that we do. He basically was just originally an outlet for my love of football shirts. I was in a position where I was just in need of some sort of footballing outlet, you know, something that's quick and I could sort of, I had the base there to be able to just turn it to whatever I wanted it to be. So I thought, well, you know, I drew the skeleton. I put him in a classic Juventus shirt. I think it's a 98 Juventus home shirt with obviously the famous black and white stripes. And then at the time it was the Sony logo.
Yes.
But obviously because I'm hilarious, I changed it to the word Boney. and, you know, and it just sort of went from there. And people sort of, it got a really great response. You know, sort of, as with a lot of my work, I put it out on my social media. Got a great response from people. I did a couple more. I did a sort of classic 90s Dortmund shirt. Then I think I did a Newcastle away shirt, the maroon and blue stripes. And then by that point, then people started to request them. So we were only like a couple of them in, and people were like, oh, can you do this one? Can you do that one? And before I knew it then, Kit and Bone, before it was Kit and Bone, had grown into something that other people wanted and were interested in. So it was no longer... it was no longer my little baby. It was everybody's little little sort of piece of footballing joy that they could enjoy on a daily basis. You know, there was a point when we were putting out new ones. I was putting out new ones every day, basically. And you know, sadly, there's not the time for that now because the business as an entity is growing and expanding at such a rate that, you know, to do a new piece of bony artwork, there doesn't feel like there's a time for it at the moment. But obviously alongside the orders that people put in, there are always new ones sort of coming to life and happening. But basically then the business had sort of been sort of going along and the idea and the notion of Boney had sort of grown out of this skeleton character who sort of didn't really have I wasn't going to call my business Boney. I didn't really feel quite right. The original notion for it, the original name I think I'd given it was something, was Death and Glory Hunting. Sort of the idea of death and glory, but death and glory. Anyway, again, that didn't feel right. It only that lasted perhaps a couple of weeks as a name for it.
Okay.
And then it was actually a conversation with my good wife, and she was saying, "Well, what is it about?" And it's like, "Well, the whole point of it is, it's just like those of us who love football and love football shirts and have that passion for it. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are in the world, what team you actually support. If you love a shirt, you just love a shirt. So it's ultimately, it's about the kit and the bones on which you hang it, I guess. You know, it's the...
Okay, yeah.
And that's it. And it's that simple. So, you know, she was like, well, why don't you just call it Kit and Bone? So top marks to her for finally
fits.
Nailing it
down.
It
absolutely fits. It's even got that kind of... that kind of hook to it when you say so. And the branding just... fits all together.
Ooh, thank you.
And can you talk us through how that's grown from the collections and Even now, your partnership with the Wild and Free Foundation and your strong ethos to contribute to the good things that's happening in the world.
Yeah, well, that's something that I've always kind of been. I've always been very passionate about. I think football, obviously, in the past has had a has got a bad rep, and I think it still has a bad rep in many circles. But I mean, you know, in the circles that I move in and the things that I see about football, on the whole, there is so much positivity and community spirit and joy that just comes through from football fans in that shared love of the game itself. And again, you know, like with the, you know, the whole thing behind Kit and Bone is, you know, it's stripping back the fact of, you know, who you support and what team you follow, but just loving the game for the sake of loving it and enjoying it for what it is in front of you at that time. And ultimately kind of the idea then to be able to offer something back and support the sort of the community projects that a lot of the clubs that we work with run is very, very important to me. The first few shirts that we did we worked with a great group down in Eastbourne called the Tuesday Night Football Club. So, you know, I think it's quite a Ron Steele name that they have. But we created a kit for them, sort of very Boca Juniors inspired jersey that we did. And you know, what it did was that allowed us to kind of give a bit back to them and offer them something unique to them, which I think they probably wouldn't have been able to get from a sort of bigger, more traditional supplier. And then we also worked with the brilliant team at 1874 Northwich, who seem to be getting more shout outs in this
anyone else. They seem to have a magic touch, yeah.
Yeah, so again, as anyone who's listened to the previous episode will know, the team down there are really switched on. They're super guys, and we created a training jersey with them that it really like plays into the Kit and Bone ethos of kind of basically taking everything that you know about what you'd expect to see in a football shirt and just giving it a bit of a remix ultimately, and then playing it out to something slightly different on the other side of what went into the machine. So we did an olive green base shirt with some really like punchy bright pink decals on it, and it's got some similarities to the newly released Spurs away shirt.
Yes.
In terms of the colorways, which sort of has popped up much more recently, which is interesting. But they wanted to go with their sponsor on the front. On the front of that is a logo that they use as part of their sort of community project, where they sort of help people with sort of their mental health, and kind of basically they are a community football club and they are there to support the community and so we were raising money for their local branch of Mind through sales of that shirt. So, you know, it's a really nice kind of way of just being able to say, look, we can make something interesting and cool and new, and we can help support the people that you want to help support. And then on top of that, then we kind of have our chosen charities that we kind of give back to and feel strongly about the work that they do. I've had a relationship with the Free Kicks Foundation, who do wonderful footballing experiences for children who are sort of either sick or recently bereaved or having a generally a hard time of it, and they will benefit from the sales of sort of the stuff that kind of isn't in association with anybody else.
Oh, very good. And moving on to recent times and the Wild and Free Foundation collection, can you talk us through these?
Absolutely. So that was an opportunity that came about. I've been talking to the very nice people at Football Shorts, who sort of are a great outlet for sort of sharing short films from the world of football. Should definitely go and give those a follow if you don't already. I was talking to them about this incredible opportunity that they had to to have exclusive rights to show this documentary about the Rhino Cup. And I was a bit like, what's this? It sounds amazing. And in a nutshell, the Wild and Free Foundation, they work and exist in Mozambique to be able to try and stem and stop ultimately the poaching of rhino, which, you know, obviously that's, you know, it's devastating to hear that these sort of beautiful creatures are being murdered for and mutilated for their horn, you know, which is, you know, it just feels so wrong this day and age. But also the people then who are coming from the communities to do the poaching or then try and protect the reserve and the rhinos themselves, they're all coming from the same villages and same communities. It's like tearing these people apart, and yes. people are getting shot and people are dying as a result of those poaching skirmishes. And you can just imagine how devastating that is on the community. And they'd always had like in the area, still had a very sort of militant approach to trying to stop it. And then the Wild and Free Foundation basically sat down with sort of people from all parties and said, look, what can we do to stop this? And I think somebody just put their hand up and said, well, we all like football. I was like, okay, what are we going to do with that? And they've now started this amazing tournament called the Rhino Cup. There's 14 men's teams. There are 10 girls teams that play. And there is just this incredible response to it, that it is having the positive impact that they really hoped it would. And I almost, you know, it doesn't make sense that just the game of football can sort of stop this massively tragic thing occurring. But, you know, that is, you know, that in many ways is the beauty of football that I was talking about earlier, that ability to just bring people together and stop them thinking about things outside and just kind of find a common ground and a commonality and a mutual language that everybody can talk. So I thought, well, that sits so perfectly with what Kit and Bone is all about. I was like, I need to speak to these people and see if I can help them. And that's exactly what happened.
Ah, fantastic. And if anybody wants to read more on the cause and their efforts, if they do visit kitandbone.com, they can read up on your work with them and click through to the foundation. Is that right, to find out more about their efforts?
Yeah, absolutely. You can, there's a page on our website dedicated to the Wild and Free Foundation. And also you can support them directly if you're a football shirt connoisseur or a collector, or just like the idea of helping out with football through football. You can now buy the first part of the collection that is available on the website. So there's already 7 shirts that represent one half of the league's teams already. We've sort of taken our usual remixing of the kits and kind of created a brand new style for all of those teams, and we'll be launching a lot more stuff as the year goes on. So do keep checking back.
Ah, very good. And can you talk us through the design process behind the collection, and especially the central graphic and the kind of textured pattern? It'd be great to know more about the thought process and how you approach the collection.
Absolutely. Well, the central theme for the collection is the notion of being free. When I was talking to the charity, and it kind of felt like they were very they sort of stressed the fact that ultimately without the opportunity to do something else in the communities, people sort of felt like they were almost being driven towards the poaching as a sort of last resort. And obviously, you know, there's a suggestion there that those people then are trapped in that cycle of going round and round and round. And likewise, the rhinos themselves are trapped in that cycle because they've got nowhere to go. They're just sort of an innocent bystander in this sort of tragic sort of story that's being played out time and time again. So, you know, actually, it kind of felt to me that they have this shared commonality, that actually both parties here are trapped by the situation, and what the Wild Free Foundation are doing is attempting to free them from said situation. So I kind of felt like this collection, you know, I mean, African football's got a really rich history of beautiful design in their shirts and having loads of fun with their designs and the way that they work their kits. And the temptation with this was to go completely crazy with it and do all sorts of jazzy and wonderful things. But that doesn't really play into the same sort of, into the lines of how kit and bone shirts come to life. It's a, you know, sort of, I think my design ethos is quite considered and will always give you the story first sort of thing. So I wanted to kind of give this, this central notion to the idea of being free. So the pattern itself, if you go online and have a look, the where the sponsor would sit on a football shirt, normally across the middle of the chest, the word free is in big letters, but that is made up by a pattern that is sort of intersected by the zigzags that come out of our logo. And each part of that pattern represents either a different animal or a sort of traditional African style pattern that sort of represents the idea of the animals and the people of the community sort of living in harmony together through what the work of the foundation is doing. And then the rest of the design then, again, I wanted each team to have their own sense of identity and individuality, but I also wanted the complete collection of shirts to feel like they belong to a set. So there are a kit of parts that kind of work universally across the jerseys, things like the placement of the sponsors, placement of the badges and that sort of thing, but also bringing each one to life through the animal. So each team has an animal that represents the sort of the club name, or it's in the club name, or as part of the nickname of the club. So each one of those was kind of like brought to life through some sort of bespoke decals that that was created to go across the shoulders, which is kind of like a subtle difference between all of the shirts, as well as the colorways. And then bringing the crests to life. The original crests on the shirts sort of had the name of the team, they had the shield around them and that sort of thing. And I kind of thought, well, if we're talking about freedom here, for me, it's we really should be breaking the animals out of the cage that is the surrounding of the name and the badge and the shield and that sort of thing. And so, you know, we sort of physically freed the animals from the shields and sort of made them nice and big on the shirt. So they've had a really, really great response online. So I'm pleased that they've been so popular with everyone that's seen them so far.
Oh, very good. And in terms of designing for print production on material, do you typically approach it to whatever constraints the garment producers are able to offer, or do you like to, right, this is what we want to do, then share it with whoever is going to be doing the production side, and then they can let you know how possible or not possible certain things you've asked for? Like, kind of how does it work in designing a kit that can then be physically produced?
Yeah, so we work very closely with our production partner, who again are a local business to us. It's a great partnership where we're able to kind of go and, you know, see them at any point on any day and just kind of go, right, I'm thinking about this, what could we do? And so there is a real sort of collaborative approach to bringing the designs to life. And basically, I mean, I always feel a bit like, I probably shouldn't say this to the entire world, but I feel like the world, I mean, maybe it's the slightly anarchic side of my design thinking, but the rules are kind of there to be broken. And if you see a way around them, then that's how interesting and new things happen. I'm not condoning doing bad things. But what I am saying is, in a design sense, if you can kind of see a way around how something you're being told something should be built, you can then create really, really interesting, exciting things off the back of that. So so in terms of your question, we're kind of, it's a mixture of the both, really. There's the constraints of the garments that we work with and the production methods that we have, but at the same time, we look at it as a, an opportunity and a challenge to kind of break what's been done before and kind of do something a bit more exciting and interesting with them each time. And I think, you know, I'm a big fan of shirts having a bit of physical texture to them. You know, I want, you know, I like to use the sort of heat press decals. I don't particularly go down the dye sublimation route, which is something that's very popular these days with football shirts. But I think for me, the garment's got to be something that once it lands in your, you know, through your letterbox on your doorstep, I want people to pull it out of the bag and feel like they've got something that looks exciting, feels like a good quality. It's a really lovely fit. And they're proud to put it on rather than be something that they kind of pull out of the cupboard when they have friends around and go, oh, look how fun this is. Yes. I want people to love the things that they're buying ultimately.
In terms of those two production processes, can you just explain for those that maybe aren't too familiar with those two in terms of a print process, what is the difference between those?
Yeah, of course. Well, so dye sublimation is a process that requires sort of blank, you know, you have your blank canvas of your fabric or your garment, and that is then sort of basically printed onto, in the most basic of terms, you're sort of printed on to as if you would imagine it coming through your printer at home. And it's all printed into the fabric then. So there is no sort of difference in the texture or the look of the garment as it kind of comes, you know, the finished garment is a flat finished piece, which then has sort of all your badges and everything kind of, and even your numbers all sort of printed into it. Whereas the heat press process, that is something that we're very passionate about, has that nice juxtaposition between two different types of fabric and material, and different colours, and the way that they kind of then interact with the light in the room around them as you kind of move around, that sort of thing. So I can see your shirt there, Marcus, where you've got the, you know, our black and gold Lost Angels jersey on. You know, it's a sort of a fairly matte black finished sports jersey, but then with that really like punchy gold decals on the top, and they just kind of really sting out and kind of have, it has a, like a real richness to it, and the way that it plays with the light kind of, you know, keeps it exciting and you know, I feel like it's a joy to look at.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and that does give us a seamless segue into the Lost Angels collection, in fact, and that process, the heat transfers for me work so perfectly with this because it allows light to reflect off the gold on the shirt, so just lifts it up that's so much more. Can you talk us through the Lost Angels collection?
Yeah, so that came about with in collaboration with a seller of sort of football merchandise out in Los Angeles. He came to me sort of, we were talking about creating a jersey that kind of encapsulates the culture of the new breed of football fans in Los Angeles. I think, you know, obviously there's now two teams in LA, two big teams with, you know, one with a great heritage and one that is kind of tearing up the rule books and just doing things
absolutely,
a bit differently and kind of operating, feels like quite a different way of operating in the MLS. It feels like a very different type of MLS franchise in many ways. I've been quite interested in the way that they work and the way that they look but it's about the fans. So the way that the fans are, you know, you see photographs of the fans in the stadium and they just look so much like they're living and breathing every minute of it, and they're sort of culturally they just seem like a really exciting breed of US soccer fan, and they have this kind of slightly you know, they are the black sheep of the family in terms of the culture in the MLS, and I think that's and they really play up to it, and that's kind of what we want to create with the Lost Angels theme. It's this idea that you know, we are the rebels. We are the slightly different breed of fan, and you know, we kind of, so we created the graphic then that's on the front of that kind of I wanted that to feel a bit like it had, it would sit in some like really like, it would be on like a dusty shelf at the back of your of a bar somewhere. That kind of,
yeah,
you know, it's like, what's that? What's the black bottle over there with the gold on it? And it's like, yeah, that's the Lost Angels liquor. It's like, it's real.
Yeah.
It's a really like,
that's a know, drink for a long night.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's, and that's kind of where it kind of grew out of really. And then, you know, we've kind of got the fun take and play on the different, you know, sort of, expected decals and badges in the way that we, you know, the way that we do things. It's kind of having a bit of fun with the expected, and turning it into something completely new and different.
Ah, you've certainly done that. Absolutely. It'd be great to touch on your work as a designer outside of the football world. One project that stands out for me was the BBC Tomorrow's World podcast visual identity you worked
yes.
on. Can you talk us through that as a case study?
Absolutely. That again is it's one of my favourite jobs that I've ever done. The opportunity came about. I don't work so much with them now. So there was a particular production company who I had a strong connection with a certain member of their team who isn't there now. So that sort of dynamic changed slightly. But the opportunity came about to do the Tomorrow's World podcast, and the BBC were relaunching Tomorrow's World as a super kind of forward-thinking, tech-focused, future imagining program that was just completely different and so much more cool and edgy than the 80s show that we'll probably remember as, you know, growing up watching as kids, where you had like people being tormented by robot hoovers and that sort of thing. It was like, you know, it's gone past the joke of tech going wrong, but the idea of, you know, the dark side of tech and the how tech kind of like can completely change ultimately there's one episode talking about how AI ultimately will destroy mankind. So there's this really dark, almost Black Mirror-esque feel to the series in terms of the content. So I just had sort of free rein to kind of bring this stuff to life with that kind of like darker thinking behind it. I mean, it's perfectly with my, you know, my approach. You know, I have to keep talking about this idea of being, you know, breaking the rules slightly and wanting to kind of do things slightly differently. And it just has that nice kind of darkness to it that kind of works with my style. And the idea was this, the idea is the sort of the amalgamation of human and robot and not perhaps knowing which is which. So all of the graphics then for it were, they would be kind of, they would be sort of organic beings and life forms. So there were people, there were animals and that sort of thing that was sort of representing that sort of organic side of things. And then each one of them had a sort of mechanical construction positioned inside them, and it was sort of like almost like an X-ray kind of look to it, but in some really like sort of popping blues and pinks. So you kind of got this idea that you were looking at one thing, but sat behind it was something completely different and perhaps a bit more sinister and unexpected.
Oh, very good. And can you let people know where they can find that project online? I came across it on your InVision app portfolio.
Yeah, so there is, I mean, finding that, you're going to have trouble. Although you have done, which is quite impressive. Well done.
I think I found that through your Behance page.
Yeah, so probably if you go to the to my Behance page, you're probably going to get some of my favourite bits on there, and that is definitely on there. It's probably a project I should make more of, really, in the wider world, isn't it?
Show off. Yes, yeah. and going back to you in the world of kit design, what would be kind of standout all-time kits for you if you were to look back on either kits that you maybe own yourself or what you think stands out as real beauties?
Yeah, okay. I mean, there are some kits in my personal collection that I am very proud of and very proud to have them as part of my collection. I have an original Barcelona centenary kit, the half and half red and the blue.
Yes.
From the 99 season. I visited the Nou Camp that year and bought the shirt from the shop, had it printed. It's got Rivaldo 11 on the back in the gold print. In the gold, yeah.
Yes,
so it's
nice.
Always been there. It's always been there. That's it. And so, you know, that's a real beauty, I think, in the collection that I've got here. There's a shirt that I don't own, and it perhaps harks back maybe to possibly my favourite Boney print, but I would love a World Cup 98 Brazil home shirt. I just don't own one. And you know, with the way that the football market is these days in terms of secondhand collectibles, picking one of those up these days is in a size that I want is quite a tricky task at a reasonable price.
Yeah. I'll just go deep into an eBay search and you can find your connections in that way. And it's amazing that it's amazing the bargains you can find. And I tend to get a lot of mine from the same few people, in fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So
there are
yeah, you discover your own little world and your own connected dots.
Yeah, amazing. Well, and that's interesting because I think, you know, as a shirt that I'm, you know, that I would want, it doesn't feel like a particularly rare or unusual shirt, but there's something about it that I just really, really love. I think I love the simplicity of it. I think I love those lines that go down the sleeves.
Yeah,
I always thought that you know a classic Brazil shirt is just a beautiful thing. But there's something about that one in particular. I don't know whether it's the mystique of perhaps what happened that night in Paris, you know, before the game with Ronaldo and all that sort of thing. But you know, it's just something that in my head I think, you know, why didn't I buy one of those at the time? You know, and that's the thing, isn't it? It's that sort of living with the regret.
Even the blue one with the white out accents on the sleeve, that was a rarely worn, I seem to remember. Well, I don't know if it was actually rarely worn, but just in my memory, I don't remember it being worn too much. And for some reason, I can only picture Bebeto in it. But he was kind of coming towards the end of his time, I think, playing for Brazil then. So,
yeah. But that is, you know, again, because it's the same template, isn't it? It's just that really lovely, simple design. And it's got that kind of sort of back end of the 90s kind of Nike feel to it, where the material was still quite weighty. You had all the kind of, you know, it had all the hallmarks of that kind of US sports manufactured jersey. And it was just lovely. Just a really, really... it sort of sits, it's just got all the things. When you touch it, you just think, well, that's nice. And when you look at it, you think, that's nice. And it's just got the full package. It's like a, you know, real 360 enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's like that kind of weightier material than now that, you know, when it gets, you know, when it gets wet, it's heavy, but it looks and feels good anyway.
Yeah,
and looking ahead to the future, what would be, what does the future hold for you and Kit and Bone, Matt? Is there any particular plans you can share or anything that you would love to see happen?
I think the position that we're in now is a really exciting one. I think the pace at which the support for the brand is growing is just phenomenal, and I'm so grateful to everyone who's kind of just hit the follow, hit the like, hit the purchase button, because this for me as an individual is sort of living out a boyhood fantasy. I'm doing, you know, I now have the opportunity to do exactly what I've always wanted to do, and the fact that people are coming with us on the journey and are just as excited about what we're doing as we are ourselves, that's wonderful. That's really, really exciting. And I think in terms of what's to come next is, you know, there are so many conversations that I'm having all the time with so many different types of people. You know, I, I, I've almost lost for words in terms of what the possibility is. I sort of feel like we could go anywhere from this point. And that's the really exciting thing. You know, there are people that I'm talking to that I think, I can't believe I'm talking to this individual person about this project, whether it comes off or not, to have had that conversation. It's just slightly mind blowing for me. And I think that's the point we're at now. It's you know, the opportunity to make real and realize some of the really exciting projects that are kind of floating around our heads at the minute, trying to get things brought to life. So
very good.
Anything can happen.
And if Kit and Bone were to work with one football club in the world to produce a one-off special shirt to celebrate either an anniversary or a particular season, who would that be? And you can't say Peterborough.
I'm
going to put that to one side.
I was considering throwing that one down. Oh, it's really tough, isn't it?
You know what though? If your honest to God answer would be Peterborough United, then you know I'll accept.
But that's ridiculous. That feels ridiculous, doesn't it? That feels absolutely ridiculous to think that of all the clubs in the world, I want to go and work with Peterborough United.
Well, no, but I mean, think of that and as a way that as a starting point, and then to go back and yeah. Well, there you go. Good for you.
I don't know. I mean, do you know what? Actually, a club who I have always massively respected their shirt and how they look and the way that they conduct the launches of their kits, and they're just always right up there in terms of having great shirts that have that kind of connection with their history, but also are always fresh and interesting and different. Is Arsenal.
Okay.
Arsenal are a superbly dressed football club. I think this year again they're absolutely bang on with the kits they've got. Even their away shirt, which you know, the day that they launched, everybody kind of looked at that and went, "Well, I'm not sure about this. How are they? You know, what are they thinking?" And I know it's white, and I know that's technically sacrilege in the Arsenal fan space. But when you see that shirt on the pitch with that incredible typeface on the back, that name set they've got, that number set they've got on the back. Wow. You know, the full package on that shirt is just so good. So nice. You know, Adidas have got that spot on. I think to do something with Arsenal, I think could be a really, really exciting opportunity at some point, maybe.
No, fantastic. Well, I can absolutely say I'm sure everyone would be very eager to keep an eye out for this. Absolutely. Yes. Brilliant. Well, Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure today. It really has. And I can say that I'm always a wee bit torn about wearing one of my Kit and Bone shirts to play in, because being a keeper who plays predominantly on very good quality but still artificial surfaces, most of the time, I really don't want to do anything that could possibly detract from the look of the shirt itself. But I really should do that one day, because it feels like I'm not taking advantage of the beautiful shirts I've got. So if I do that, I will let you know, and I'll photograph it, because it will be a definite occasion.
We want evidence. We want to see it. We want to see those shirts in out on the pitch.
I know where I'd wear life. It. Well, there's one place particularly that we play at. One group that I play with, that's the best surface. So that's where I'd wear it. So I will let you know. It'll be a big day.
Look forward to it. Look forward to seeing it.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Matt. And sorry, can you just remind people where they can find you online?
Yeah, so if you head to kitandbone.com, that's where you'll find all of the gear to buy. And then if you want to follow us on social media, it's at kitandbone across Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. Thank you very much for your time today, Matt.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.